This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Today in studio, I have with me Michael Daly from the Atlanta Healing Center, and we're going to talk about some good news in the news and some not so good news in the news. I'm sure that most of you have been aware of the recent release of the 50-year anniversary of Surgeon General's reports on all sorts of topics, but primarily on smoking. And we, of course, now have access to the Surgeon General's report. If you are interested in reading the entire report, you may do so by going to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services website. Just the executive summary is well over 50 pages. So the entire report is quite extensive and inclusive of all sorts of news. Some of it is good. Some of it is not so good. And the reason I wanted to take some time today to talk about it was that in this report, they have greatly expanded the number of organ systems and diseases that are directly related to cigarette smoking. The list has lengthened year by year, but this year there is much more documentation, much more literature supporting what supporting their findings, and some new areas of concern that we need to talk about. So let's start with the good news. In January of 1964, Luther L. Terry, M.D., who is the ninth Surgeon General of the United States, released the first report on the health consequences of smoking. The title of the report was Smoking and Health, Report of the Advisory Committee of the Surgeon General of the Public Health Service. This was a landmark step in finally linking with data and literature the direct effect of smoking and the impact that it has on our health, and looking at it in a global way, in a worldwide way. Now, much has happened in the past 50 years. We've had 31 of these Surgeon General reports. Multiple Surgeon Generals have released their reports. I always get confused where to put the additional S when we already have an S in the name. So excuse me. I'm sure my husband at home will correct me. The good news is that since that first report back in 1964, 43% of Americans over the age of 18 smoked. 43%. Now, I don't know about you guys in the studio because you're a lot younger than me, but I certainly remember watching TV, watching the evening news, and seeing the anchor, the Walter Cronkites, Johnny Carson on the late night show, smoking. Edward L. Murrow always had, you know, there was just a constant cloud above his head as he was doing his interviews and his reports. It was such a part of American life that I don't think we even noticed. But do you remember riding an airplane back in the 60s and 70s? Was it in the 80s? I can't remember when 80s. It finally stopped being okay, but how they would separate the airplane into the smoking and the non-smoking sections, and there would just be a little sign on the top of the seats, right?
Yes.
Top of the seats, this is the smoking section, this is the non-smoking section. And I remember having to sit in the back on the last row of the non-smoking section and just being so aware when I got off the plane of how my hair smelled like smoke, even though I was in the non-smoking part of the plane. it was really a part of life. I mean, do you remember how many times you'd see people smoking and it was just part of everything?
Well, what I remember is seeing television shows where they would have the housewife or the mother cooking dinner, and she would have a cigarette hanging out of her mouth as she's like chopping vegetables and doing stuff, and she would reach over and just flick it into the ashtray and put it back in her mouth and continue on, you know, touching everything. And now when you see like those old clips of that, you're amazed that the people actually did that.
Right. Not only that they did it, but it was so commonplace that was part of our whole television.
I got to go one other one.
Okay.
Because of some of the situation, I go home and I watch the old westerns.
Yes.
Almost like therapy and almost like cartoons now as compared to entertainment like they were back in the 50s and Bat Masterson. And
yes.
And the two thing, and one thing I think of you always when I'm sitting there watching a western, and that's they all wind up having a drink. They're always in a saloon.
Right.
You know, and smoking, but they're always in a saloon. So were they priming us for addiction back in the 50s? Or, I mean, you had to have your shot.
You had to have your shot. You had to have your drink. You had to have, and that was just really part. No one thought it strange at all that all of the heroes, all the cowboys, the James Bond characters, everybody ended up at the bar, and that's how we ended a really good day and a really good movie was at the bar. And I remember the Dick Van Dyke Show, and they would have their cocktails at 5, and that's just what we did, and we had cocktails before dinner. This whole way in which it was just such a part of life that it seemed very strange to people when the Surgeon General came out with this. And there was a lot of controversy. There was a lot of uproar about, well, what are you talking about? There's Lucky Strike ads that say one out of however many doctors recommend Lucky Strikes. And exactly, the cool menthol, as though that's going to take care of your sore throat or your bronchitis. It really has come such a long way, and really in the last 10 years, where we've seen many states, many cities making smoking more and more restricted, and now many places not allowing smoking at all.
Period.
Certainly, you wouldn't think of lighting up on an airplane. You wouldn't think of of smoking at school. I grew up in an area where there wasn't a lot of smoking. But did teachers smoke back in the day?
Yeah.
You know, the teacher's lounge.
Yes.
You know, they'd open the door to the and they'd
really.
Yeah. Fellow out into the hallway.
So nowadays, I think as a teacher, I think certainly as a healthcare provider, if you smoke, you don't do it openly and you don't want to be anywhere where anybody's going to see you do it.
Right.
Coach Hart, meanest guy I thought when I was in junior high, and wound up as I became older, he got to be a friend of my dad's and I got to be a friend of it. But always had his cigarettes in his, and he was our football coach in junior high school.
And did he smoke during practice?
No, he didn't smoke. I don't recall him ever doing it. But he smoked in his little cubbyhole office that he had, and nobody. I mean, that was like you said, it was okie dokie.
It was just what was done,
and it was normal.
If 53% of adults were smoking, I mean, that's a huge, huge number. That is a huge number. And so I guess reflective of the times was the fact that it was really embedded in just common everyday events.
You know, it was promoted by the military, too, in its own way. And it was, light them up if you got them when you're on break. If you hadn't got them, get one from your buddy. And during World War II, you know, that was in your sea rations,
right?
You got 4 cigarettes, in my C rations in 60, in 70, I got four of the cigarettes from World War II.
Are you serious?
No.
Were they still?
Fact, Leanne and I were talking about the other. You'd light one and just.
It would really go up in smoke.
Oh, yeah. Quickly. You couldn't. No lungs were manufactured to inhale one of those things after, 40 years, 30 years. But the military promoted it. And my dad was a big smoker, and as an officer, he smoked on ship, and, there was never a second thought about it.
Right.
Can I tell you one thing?
Absolutely.
As I told you once before, my uncle owned a ranch in New Mexico, and I literally went out riding with one of his cowboys, one of his hands. We were riding the riverbed. And this guy could almost be at a trot and roll a cigarette.
Yeah.
He couldn't afford to. You didn't make any money as a cowboy, working on a ranch. And this was in the mid-60s. So he always bought, I can't even remember, my grandfather also rolled his own. And he could well afford it, but he had a slight case of Parkinson's, but he could sit there
and still
roll it, And but the cowboy on horseback, it was incredible to watch him.
At a full trot. Now, that was a well-practiced hand.
Oh, yeah.
That could be moving in the wind and still roll a cigarette.
It was just you smoked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody, smoked. That was really...
There's a song, Smoke Some Cigarettes, and I know the group that did the recording of it, and it was back in the late 40s.
It seems unbelievable to us now when we're in this day and time, and I guess the good news is from that period in the early 60s where 43% were smoking. Now, at least in 2012, it's down to 18%.
But that's our culture, not
exactly
foreign cultures.
No, that's very, very true. Very true. And in fact, having just come back from the East, the Far East, many, many more people smoking. Lots of people. Smoking, young people smoking, older people smoking, lots and lots of tobacco consumed. Certainly, my experience in Turkey has been lots of cigarette smoking, hookah smoking, mm-hmm. Lots and lots of time and effort and money spent on tobacco. And as we saw in Canada, still the First Nations people, sometimes over 50% of the folks still are smoking.
Isn't that our market now?
I think it is. I think
the market is
starting to go towards China, towards Korea, towards Canada. Mm-hmm. But American cigarettes in Canada are $13 a pack.
Very, very expensive. And that has been one of the efforts, I think, in trying to reduce the consumption of tobacco has been to make the prices more and to escalate the taxes on the cigarettes so that in doing so, people will consume less. And I think that is certainly been one of the strategies. But the efforts have been successful. We still have a ways to go. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Surgeon General's report and other news in the news. Thanks for listening.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle, medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. I have Michael Daly in studio with me today, as well as David, producing our show and helping us with the stroll down memory lane as we look at the 50th anniversary of the first Surgeon General's report on tobacco. This, as I said, the good news is we've decreased the amount of smoking.
I just realized I had a dumb question. I can't remember if he did that because, wasn't it because of heart as opposed to cancer? Or
yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Initially, it was cardiac, and there was not the strong link with cancer. That came in later reports, but there was the issues about lung disorders, cardiac disorders, and then lung cancer was added as the next thing. And the good news, still, if we want to keep on good news, is the mortality rates from lung cancer in this country are actually now declining. Most people who go to a doctor's visits these days are asked about tobacco use. They may not still be asked about alcohol or drug use, but it is pretty common when you go for a physical or you go to see your doctor and you're filling out health information or you're doing a screening with his staff or even the doctor themselves may ask you about, do you smoke? And often people are given the counsel that they need to decrease smoking, and they're often offered, hopefully, support and help in doing that. Since this Surgeon General report in 64, 2 million Americans have died from tobacco-related deaths. We still, however, have 40 million people in the United States who are currently dependent to some degree or another on tobacco. And each day, this just hurts me at my soul, 3,200 people younger than the age of 18 start to smoke their first cigarette. 3,200 children a day start smoking in the United States. And another 2,100 young adolescents and young adults move from being occasional smokers to becoming daily smokers. So the concern has been that in the older age group and in, of course, our age group, the young adult middle age group, we've actually seen a decline in smoking. That's the group that has, for a variety of reasons, made the decisions to stop smoking. And it's that group that has brought the percentage of smokers down. It's the young children, the young adults, adolescents, that group is still growing. And unlike previous years and decades where it was primarily the young males that were smoking, these days there are more young women smoking than there are young men. So the highest growing population of smokers are young women under the age of 21. This is the group that is really accelerating their...
Is it because of a target, or is it because...
You know, I think there's lots of reasons. Folks want to say that it's related to women's rights and women's equal opportunity. Others are pointing the finger at adolescent peer pressure, where this is what we do to be cool. There are still some other researchers and other views that it's related to, I want to control my weight.
Exactly.
I smoke instead of having lunch. I smoke instead of eating a snack. I smoke when I feel anxious instead of having a donut. I smoke when I feel good instead of having dessert. And then conversely, the fear that if they stop smoking, they will gain weight.
I was going to say, I've known a lot of people that have stopped smoking, started gaining weight, and decided to go back to smoking.
Right.
Because of the weight gain.
So I think it's a multifactorial, as most things are, but the concern, and the concern raised in the Surgeon General's report, is that if we continue to have this level of increase in smoking, our good numbers that we've seen, the decrease, is really going to be reversed, and that we're going to see more and more younger people taking up the habit of smoking and in engaging in smoking. One of the difficulties as well, according to the report, is that people of lower socioeconomic status, people who can not afford the larger taxes, the bigger prices, are the ones that are more likely to be smoking. Minorities, people who are high school dropouts, some ethnic groups and other racial minorities, and individuals living with mental illness and substance abuse disorders or addiction are the subset that are much more likely to be smokers and much more likely to have the smoking-related diseases. So there's a lot of concern that we're going to have to really redouble the efforts in terms of prevention and treatment in order to prevent a rise again in some of these preventable causes of death that heretofore have been decreasing. And they really want to lower the goal set forth in this report was to lower smoking to 10% over the next 5 to 10 years. So continued effort, but we're really, really worried because of the children currently who are under the age of 18, living kids right now. It's anticipated that if this rise in smoking continues, we'll have an additional almost 6 million early deaths, shortened lives because of tobacco-related illnesses in just this group alone.
There's obviously no doubt that smoking is addictive.
Right.
No question. So I'm thinking, are we going to put it on a level of, you know, when you look at it, and they're already doing it, people are holding up grocery stores or mini markets or whatever and stealing cigarettes. I mean, the price is up to that point.
Right.
So is it going to raise cigarettes to a level of other drugs and drug addictions where you have an increase in crime related to heroin or crack? So then are we going to have an increase in crime related to smoking or cigarettes?
I mean, I think that's a really good question. I think we already do see that. I think with the limits in the age at which you can buy, a lot of cigarettes have been stolen. Nowadays, if you walk into a pharmacy, yeah, they sell them at pharmacies. At a pharmacy, at a grocery store, many times they're behind the counter, they're behind glass, they're in locked cases in some instances because there has been, you know, certainly theft is a big problem. Whether the prices will be to the level that we see with other drugs, to what we see in Colorado now, the early reports coming out that the recreational marijuana, is three times as expensive as the medical marijuana. They're running short on this, and now the fear is they're going to have the black market come back again. And since black market non-sanctioned selling is still very alive and well in the states bordering Colorado and Washington State, concern is that they're going to just see a higher level of illegal trafficking in marijuana as more and more people get addicted to marijuana and are using higher grades, higher potencies. And that brings us to the next study that was done by the University of Massachusetts Medical School and the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, which looked at the content, the amount of tobacco or nicotine in a cigarette from 1997 to 2012. And what they found is that the four leading tobacco producers have actually increased the nicotine content of each cigarette by 15%. So when we see that more and more young people are getting addicted to smoking, we also see that the nicotine content itself has gone up. 15% is really quite a bit. It's gone up from 1.65 milligrams per cigarette to almost 2 milligrams per cigarette. And that increase in the nicotine content makes these cigarettes, and these are the R.J. Reynolds group and the Philip Morris group have a much higher nicotine content than do other cigarette producers. Now, R.J. Reynolds came back in response to this research study and said, oh, it's related to drought conditions. And when there's less rain, the plants don't grow as big, the tobacco becomes more concentrated with nicotine. So there is variation from year to year based on rain. However, when they checked with the other brands of cigarettes grown in the same area, they did not see this increase in the potency of the nicotine within the cigarettes themselves. So it's really interesting to see that the cigarette companies are not taking this lying down. They're increasing the potency of the cigarettes. They're doing a number of things that I think are going to create some difficulty for us. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Surgeon General's report. Thanks again for listening. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction, and today we're talking about the 50 years of progress, the report of the Surgeon General regarding tobacco and tobacco-related disorders. We talked about the good news that fewer people overall are smoking and that fewer people are dying of lung cancer. half of, or excuse me, 2.5 million deaths have occurred in the last, since 1964, from people exposed just to secondhand smoke. 2.5 million deaths related to secondhand smoke, which brings us to the current debate that we're seeing also in the news about whether or not we can allow e-cigarettes in the workplace. Now, many of you may be aware of these nicotine-producing electronic cigarettes that take nicotine and mix it with a water vapor that is inhaled. One of the really big concerns with tobacco and with regular cigarettes is the second and third hand smoke, the second hand smoke that may be inhaled as someone's sitting near someone who is smoking, and the third hand smoke, which is actually more dangerous, which you find in your clothes and you find in the upholstery and the carpets and the fabrics in the walls, on the drapes and so forth. And the windows and the that then exposes non-smokers and smokers alike to these additional toxins. The problem with the e-cigarettes is that this nicotine is then really precipitated. It comes out of the vapor much more easily and becomes a potential problem with second and third hand nicotine exposure from people being around around and the vapor distributing the nicotine to the carpets, the chairs, the clothes, the children, and so forth. Now, true enough, this is not, it's not the same level of toxins, we don't think, that you get with the tobacco. But certainly exposure to other people with nicotine and its potential to increase levels of addiction and dependency are very worrisome. Many places do not allow smoking of any kind. McDonald's, however, has decided to allow their workers to smoke e-cigarettes. And most of the time, the e-cigarettes are not, they're not under the same ban, so they don't have to go to the smoking area. They don't have to go outside. I was just in a restaurant here in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago and noticed a number, five or six people sitting at the bar smoking an e-cigarette in a bar that clearly was not allowing other tobacco products to be used. So we're just wondering what's going to happen. United UPS has allows their employees to use e-cigarettes, but they have to pay higher health premiums. So it's going to be interesting. Only New Jersey, Utah, and North Dakota have added e-cigarettes to the statewide bans, whatever they may be in terms of regular cigarettes. And most of the 100 cities that ban smoking have not addressed the issue of are we going to allow the e-cigarettes to be used. So stay tuned, more to be revealed about that. There are a number of studies looking at the what's in the vapor, what potential harm may happen. One of the things that anecdotally I'm hearing from patients and other people who have decided to try the e-cigarette as a way to stop smoking regular cigarettes is that they actually smoke more, that they're consuming more nicotine than they were with regular cigarettes because now they feel like they can use them all the time everywhere they go. And in our lifestyle, we have made it more difficult. People smoke outside. People have to go to their car. People don't just walk around their houses, walk around stores, walk around places of business and smoke these days. With the e-cigarettes, people are now doing that again and are actually consuming more nicotine than they would have before. So back to the idea, what's happening in the Surgeon General's report? Since 1964, more than 100,000 babies have died from sudden infant death syndrome related to nicotine, smoking on the part of one or more of their parents or caretakers. So they're now relating not just prematurity and low birth weight to tobacco. They're also now linking in this study the sudden infant death syndrome with consumption of nicotine by caregivers. We see that there are a number of interesting ways in which tobacco is now related to different illnesses and diseases. We know that 87% of lung cancer deaths are related to smoking. 32% of deaths by coronary artery disease are smoking related, and almost 80% of death by chronic obstructive lung disease or emphysema are related to that. But we're now seeing that people who smoke have an increased risk of tuberculosis and death by that. And you may or may not know, tuberculosis is becoming once again an increasingly frequent occurrence. Those of us who work in the addiction field, very commonly we have to have our staff tested for TB and our patients tested for TB. We're seeing more and more treatment-resistant tuberculosis these days as individuals in other countries are able to obtain antibiotics for their cough. Rather than being evaluated, they can get those over the counter. And so they're not seeing doctors, they're not being evaluated, they're not being diagnosed and treated. And the tuberculosis disease is becoming resistant, more and more resistant to common treatments. We're seeing ectopic pregnancies. And impaired fertility is now related to tobacco. Cleft lips and cleft palates of babies born to women who smoke in early pregnancy. Erectile dysfunction. And age-related macular degeneration, one of the most common causes of blindness in people over the age of 50, is now being related to smoke, tobacco smoke, and exposure to that. So these are some of the things that had not had a clear link before that we now feel are very closely related to the use of tobacco products. And we're seeing that more and more young people are having problems. Children, they've clearly related middle ear disease. So kids who get chronic otitis, chronic ear infections, may be very directly related to their parents smoking. Children having respiratory disorders, asthma, And as we mentioned, the sudden infant death syndrome are some of the new disorder. They're not new disorders, but a new linkage with tobacco use. Clearly, an individual's risk of stroke goes up dramatically if they use tobacco. Lung cancer, coronary artery disease, and reproductive problems we know about. When they looked at the amount of deaths, there was one thing that caught my eye because we know about smoking-related cancers and we know about cardiovascular and pulmonary diseases, but 86,000 people died of in residential fires related to tobacco use. So fires started by someone falling asleep in bed. 86,000 people died from that tobacco-related problem, which I thought was really, really quite interesting. They've added liver cancer and colorectal cancer, to the long list of cancers that are caused by people who are exposed to smoke or who smoke. So when we look at the overall issues related to death and to disease, we see that there are more and more organs, and almost every organ of the body has some disorder related to smoking. Liver cancer and increased failure rate of treatment for all cancers. People who smoke are much less likely to respond to regular cancer treatment than are patients who have the same cancer, the same stage, who don't smoke. So continuing to smoke means very much that not only did the cancer come from smoking, but now your lack of response to the cancer treatment happens. Diabetes may be related and caused by smoking. Rheumatoid arthritis, weak immune systems, all of these things are, again, related to the use of tobacco and some of the 70 carcinogenic chemicals that are found in tobacco and tobacco smoke. So we've kind of beat this horse a bit, but I think it is really critical that we take this information and we see the good news that's come from it, and we see the potential bad news in terms of this great increase in smoking among young people, particularly young women. And we see a lot of young people who come into treatment, almost all of them smoke. All of the girls smoke.
People that come in non-smoking that leave smoking.
Right. And
do you have any turnaround rates? The people that stop, you know, they used to say, well, your lungs would be back to somewhat normal after 10 years or this or that. Is there any of that still being published?
You know, they do talk about what can happen if you stop smoking. And one of the things that they do cite is that some of the things are reversible, but I think they're thinking more and more that you're really continuing to carry some risk, even if you are an ex-smoker for many years, that the microscopic damage may not be as reversible as we once thought. I'm just looking real quickly here that certainly there are some forms of lung cancer that are reversed if you stop smoking, such as the adenocarcinoma, and those rates are dropping as people stop smoking. But it's really, I think, still of somewhat debate as to what is going to happen and what is the recovery time for your body, your lungs, other organ systems if you have stopped smoking. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some other news in the news. Thanks for listening.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Today we're talking about the Surgeon General's report on tobacco and have concluded that if you don't smoke, please don't start. Certainly, studies have shown that if you start smoking before the age of 18, you are much more likely to be one of those long-term, lifelong smokers. If you at least wait till after 26 for your first cigarette, you're less likely to become a chronic long-term smoker. If you do smoke, please stop. Please stop for your own health and for the health of those around you and the ones that you love. And if you need help with smoking, please feel free to contact us at the Atlanta Healing Center at 770-696-9862. We'll be happy to give you some information and some support in terms of stopping smoking and your efforts to do so. So I wanted to talk in our last section here about some other information in the news that's been very interesting. We know, of course, that Colorado, January 1st, started their recreational marijuana sales, and to much anticipation and a very rapid consumption of the available pot. Interestingly, policymakers in Colorado are imposing a 15% wholesale tax on marijuana and a 10% retail tax on marijuana. The impact of this tax, which they have been very much hoping would feed the state coffers and relieve some of the tax pressure, will be very interesting. Washington State has imposed a 25% excise tax on production, processing, and the final sale of marijuana. On top of the state's already 8.7% sales tax. So they are planning to generate a lot of revenue through the whole growing, harvesting, producing, sale of the marijuana. And it's going to be really interesting because in Colorado, if you buy an ounce now of commercial grade recreational marijuana, it's $400. Black market sales, as we talked about a few moments ago, for high grade marijuana range from $156 to $250 per ounce. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens and where the revenues go. And are the revenues going to be as high as they thought? And now that people are allowed to have a small amount of recreational marijuana on them, I'm not sure that you have to keep your sales. I was going to say,
how do you know whether you bought it legally or black market?
Right. I'm not sure that people are being told to keep their sales receipt with them at all times. So it will be interesting to see what happens because several researchers from the RAND Drug Policy Research Center should be aware that there may be some differences in the projected revenue to the state and the actual revenue to the state. We also know that there are a number of ways in which this can increase all kinds of problems within the state in terms of the policy, policing of the sales, monitoring of the taxes, and certainly the potential for increased illegal activity. And
that's not even considering the social cost, you know, for the people that are going to become unemployed and just kind of hanging out and smoking dope and sitting on the couch.
Right. People who plan to move. It reminds me of the conversations we've had a while back with our friend David Smith from the Haight-Ashbury Clinic in San Francisco, and his talking about what happened when there was a great influx of young people coming to the San Francisco area to have free love, free drugs, free sex, and found out that it wasn't free at all for the state, because now you have this influx of people interested in coming for the recreational marijuana, interested in being in a place that will allow them to use this substance openly and without fear of criminal prosecution, that it may be attracting, like you say, people who are not coming there for the good jobs or the clean mountain air. They're looking for a different Rocky Mountain High, if you follow what I mean. So and if you like John Denver, it will be very, very interesting, because I know many states are poised trying to decide whether to move forward with the projections that they're seeing in tax revenue for Washington and Colorado, whether or not this is actually going to be cost savings and a revenue production for the state. We'll see. So another interesting news release is a study that was done and published in the American Academy of Neurology. Was a six-year study that said heavy drinking, particularly in middle age, may speed up memory loss by 6 years in men. We have long understood that drinking took quite a toll on women at a much faster rate and over a shorter period of time in terms of the liver function and their cognitive function. Women are much more likely to get alcohol dementia and liver problems than men. But this study from the United Kingdom looked at what happens when middle-aged men begin drinking or are drinking heavily and what that does to their memory and their cognitive functioning. And it looks like it's much more impactful than we had initially thought. And they found that men in their middle ages drinking heavily, which and it didn't matter whether that was wine, beer, or liquor, that they had impact not only on memory but also executive functioning. Good decision-making, planning, problem-solving, all of these things are affected, and faster than those who do not drink or drink fewer drinks per day. So one other thing to begin to consider. And lastly, in our last few minutes, interesting story in Forbes about the fact that heroin use is rising when other drug abuse is failing. And this has become really, really important when Peter Shumlin, the Democratic governor of Vermont, in his State of the State address last week, spoke about the dramatic increase in heroin addiction and the dramatic impact this is having on his state. The rate of heroin use, first-time users, has increased 60% in the last decade, from as few as 90,000 people up to now 156,000 new users per year. And that's across the United States. I know here in Atlanta we are seeing many, many more young people, middle-aged people, older adults coming in with the use of heroin for the first time.
And it's upper middle class.
Right.
It's not the lower, necessarily, lower economic.
No. And it's not just young people. It is middle age and older people also coming in. And for the first time, they have used heroin. Heroin is relatively inexpensive. It's in many ways easier to obtain, at least for young people, than prescription drugs. And as someone begins to use prescription drugs, their tolerance builds. The cost of maintaining their dose, their needed dose to keep them from being sick, to keep them from going into withdrawal, gets higher and higher. They lose the ability to afford that, given that most preparations like OxyContin are a dollar a milligram. So if you're buying an 80-milligram pill, do the math. And it's not uncommon to see people taking 3 or 4 or 5 of those tablets a day. And that becomes prohibitively expensive. So we're seeing more and more people being forced to use heroin. They always assume they're going to just snort heroin and that will be okay. But because heroin has a rapid building tolerance and is so highly addictive that it's usually within a week or two, certainly not as long as a month before most people move on to having to use a needle. This is a very interesting article. I suggest if you'd like to look that up. It's in Forbes magazine, January 14th, 2014. So lots of things in the news. If you haven't started smoking, please don't. If you need to stop, please do. If you need some help, please give us a call. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. See you then.